So it seems like we may have just lost Geralyn Steele. That's not a good sign. As we bring on Michael Battle for his aforementioned Mom and Michael Hour. What's up, Michael? What'd you do to your mom, man?
I mean, I was going to ask you the same question, Jonathan. I was going to say, you know, happy to be here, but what'd you do? What happened? Because, you know, I just spoke to her off air.
So did I. I just spoke to her off air. I do not know what is happening right now. So we're going to keep an eye on this, and she will probably text me.
Yeah, she'll probably text you. When I talked to her, I mean, she may have told me that she was sick of hearing you. So maybe she, no, I'm kidding. But hopefully whatever her technical issue is will get resolved soon. But, you know, it's funny because that music obviously played a little bit longer. And it, of course, reminded me of what we were saying last time I was here, which was that I have not picked a new song yet, which I know I need to do. And it's on the list of things I need to do to find a new intro song because apparently you and my mom are tired of that one. So, and as we mentioned, you had good suggestions that I have to go back and reconsider, and we'll get there, find it. But hopefully we can get her on because I have a very LA story to tell her about something simple, as simple as shopping in Los Angeles. And I had something really fun happen today. Well, fun for me because I like finding a good deal, that is. And it's a thing that happened here, which I kind of feel like maybe the same thing that happened in the Twin Cities if it, you know, involved flip-flops or bikinis, you know, because in Minnesota there's only a few months where you're going to use a swimsuit or – actually, I've seen people in the Twin Cities in flip-flops in, like, March, so what am I talking about? But here in Los Angeles – you know, it's obviously warm all the time, but it's a fashion city. So we have all the big labels here, you know, and the same items that you might find on the East Coast or colder, fashionable, large cities, you're going to have here in L.A. too. But no one can wear them because it's 80 degrees. So
Hold on a second, Michael. I have to stop you for just a second. So you might have to retell this story again because now your mother is joining us.
I am joining you finally. Hey, Michael, you know this happens every Sunday night as soon as 10 o'clock hits. It's so weird to me, Jonathan. What is this?
I don't know. You've seen me. You've seen my head. I can't say I pull my hair out because I don't have a lot. I don't really have hair to pull out. Maybe I pull my beard out because I don't understand. I don't understand technology. I don't understand.
Well, we're all here. Her voice has joined us. I'm happy. And Mom, what I was just setting up was, I'll give you the short version of what I was saying, is a simple little story that happened today around a sweater that I found. But basically,
You went shopping.
I didn't need to go shopping. I've been doing so well, you know. But I was at the mall and to go have brunch with some friends. And I said, you know, I got there early. First of all, that's a miracle. I got to brunch early on a Sunday.
Right.
But I got there early. I said, let me go downstairs and see what's going on with that sweater. So I saw a sweater at a store. It was called Zagatin Voltaire is the name of the brand. And I saw it in April, and it had been in there a few weeks, and it was a spring intarsia sweater, which is a really fancy way of saying you don't need this because it's just too warm in the spring in Los Angeles for a full-on ski sweater. Like, if the sweater is literally the thickness of something you would wear at a ski chalet. It's beautiful, super long sleeves. It just, you know, you could throw it over anything at work, and it's really cold in the office at work. So I'm like, all right, I'm wearing the same jacket for months on this job. I need more sweaters that are open on the front that I can just put over a dress shirt in the office when it's really cold. I said, let me go check on that sweater. So my patience paid off. I have on my phone a picture of me trying on that sweater with the tags in April. And I said, you know what, I'll wait. Came in there today and they're like, oh, yes, this section is 50% off. And I said, 50? She said, yes. I said, thank you. Can I try that one in a large, please? I know my size because I was here in April. And the funny thing is the guy recognized me. I walked in, he said, welcome back. He's like, yeah, you've come in a couple times and tried that sweater on. I said, yes, I did. You said 50, right, sir? 50? Okay, I'll take that, please. Thanks. So, you know, patience pays off when you're in a city where no one needs a sweater in spring. So I'm going to wear that spring intarsia as my winter intarsia, whatever I want to call it, because it's going to be cold soon, and I'm good to go. So love it. Got a huge deal. Bought that sweater. And now I have a new thing to wear in the icy tundra that is my office every day.
You know, Michael, here's the thing. I agree with you on the buying sweaters. I just bought one, too, and it's a store that, you know, for me, I knew I would be able to find it. If I just walked through the doors, I knew I could find it. And I bought that sweater. It's royal blue. It is so pretty, and I absolutely love it. And I don't know if you've heard of this store now, but it's called Taj Zaj Mogs, and it is awesome.
It took me a second. I was like, what is she talking about? And then I, yes. Tazajaz, I believe. Tazajaz Mog. You heard
so
of
what
the
did you come up with?
Captain Voltaire. But no need to go to Jack Captain Voltaire. We have Tazajaz
Mog. That's what I'm talking about.
TJ
Maxx. And it was $19.99, and I am not talking $1,999. I'm talking $19.99. I don't know why they do that. I guess they think that we're stupid or something, that, you know, one penny is going to make the difference. It's like gasoline, you know, where it's a tenth of a penny supposed to make the difference. But anyway.
It makes a huge difference. It's psychological. They know if you see a price and it's within your existing price range, if it's $19.99,
right.
You say, oh, this, well, it's like it's $19 or $18. It's not $20. Obviously, it is entirely $20. But if they put a 19 in front of it, our brains, for some reason, always say it's a little bit less. They do it on houses, cars, no matter how big the price tag is. They know if they come in right under, for some reason, our brains say that costs less money, even though it's ostensibly the exact same thing.
That's not my problem at all. I want you to know, I go to the cashier, I don't know what this is, with this 1 cent that I'm supposed to, you know, just say, oh, my God, do I get a deal? No, you know, but I will buy what I think looks nice on me. I'm really very conscious about that. So, you know, I'm sure that I've had I know that I've had my faux pas, okay? You remember at Disney World years ago when I tried to put on an Asian-American kind of outfit with chopsticks in my hair? Wow, this was so wrong.
You mean? Are there pictures of that outfit? Is there evidence of that moment?
God, I hope not. You know, you remember Capri pants?
I burned those out of my brain. Yes, me and every other man has removed Capri pants from our minds because they were terrible.
Yeah, and the ones I chose were like, some kind of really shiny red and gold coloring, and it was a really stupid idea of me to put them on because, you know, your thighs are going to stick together because you're sweating, and it's ugly. It was really ugly, and I think about it today. Oh, and I had on a sequin gold jacket that hit right at my waist. Really, really bad idea. Had on some great shoes, though.
You might be able to take that jacket back out because at the store earlier, the Gods and Voltaire, which I'm probably mispronouncing that, but that store, the men's section is quite subdued compared to the women's section that literally had a sequin suit jacket, sequin suit pants, that whole gold sequin outfit. Oh, did I tell you, side note about that metallics are in this season? Have I told you this already?
Oh, my gosh. Don't they have actual – well, the threads are like silver or something, right? Like actual silver, no?
Yeah, so, we all know I like shiny things.
Right.
I'm pretty much like a bird in that quality. cue the song. I'm like a bird. So, look, I like shiny things. And, you know, I've been perusing online, and the new stuff is coming out. Like, I think – who is it? I think it's Valentino or Versace has a metallic silver suit, full jacket, pants, like not sequin, not sparkly, just platinum silver suit. And then I was at Nordstrom's a couple weekends ago, just browsing around all things I'm not going to buy. And there was some metallic boots for men. And I went, uh-oh. And then today in the store, there was a women's sequin golden suit. And I was like, oh, God, it's coming. They're about to come out with all the ridiculous, sparkly things, and I'm going to have to not buy it. I'm totally going to buy it. I'm going to have to not buy it and walk away.
But isn't it – yeah. Isn't it true, though, Michael, that the suits that they're making, this metallic style, actually has some type of silver in it? And so what about lightning? You know, I'm always concerned about lightning. You know this. You know this. Am I wrong?
I feel like this is an SNL skit. This is Saturday Night Live. And this is the moment in the skit where the cast starts to crack up laughing because someone goes, "But it's silver. What about lightning?" And people just look at that person in the group, look at her and go, "I'm sorry, if it's silver, the thread is metal. Is it heavy? You know, are you conductive?"
I do have some heavy pieces that, you know, lots of sequin and lots of, the like you said, metallic threads. And I'm just saying, you know how I feel about lightning.
I want to crack all the jokes about how ridiculous it is you're asking if there's actual metal silver in the coat. But then I pause because I know for a fact that I've heard of jeans that have actual gold woven into them. So I go, well, you know, Michael, you can't get mad at her because that's the thing. People have done that in the past and charged a small fortune for it, which is ludicrous, but people do it. So I will have to look it up and see if those silver jackets have actual silver in them, which I hope they don't.
You hope they don't. Okay. Well, I just need you to know. You know how I feel about it. You know, I'm always hiding. And when you live in a place where everywhere you look, there are windows, like your place, there are windows like everywhere except the bathroom, you know. You're looking out at windows. So I'm the girl that stays away from the windows when it's lighting. I sit in the middle of the floor, close everything up, you know, close all the blinds, and then I realize the blinds are metal.
I wish we had a therapist here so he could ask you what happened, who hurt you.
What happened in your childhood that
caused all of this to happen?
Okay, but, I gotta break you too. We gotta break.
Okay. We'll be back in a moment.
It is now 10:25 here at WCCO. Welcome back. So glad that you're sticking and staying with us as we do the Mom and Michael Hour. We only have a few minutes to talk before we have to do weather, but I am so excited to have my son on today. He was not on last Sunday, and he is just having a great time with his life. I am so proud of him. He didn't see a movie this week, and so I'm just curious, Michael, let's talk a little bit about monkeypox, because that has been on people's minds. And you and Joy went and had your first shot about 2 or 3 weeks ago, correct?
4 weeks ago, yeah. So we had our first shot when they became available 4 weeks ago. And as is protocol for this shot, we actually got our second and final shot yesterday at noon. So really, really happy to have that done. And supposedly, full protection begins 2 weeks after receiving your second shot. So the whole thing is a six-week-long process. I haven't reviewed the numbers in Los Angeles myself, but I've heard amongst my peer group that numbers are going down. Of course, I'm still going to do the whole process and finish it up. But yeah, got that shot, and it hurts. And it affected me even more. Yeah, like the actual injection site hurts in the same way the flu shot or the COVID vaccine hurts when they put it in your arm.
Right.
And it's given to you a bit differently than those two shots are. But like the last one, it hit me today. I got home from brunch and the shopping and whatever else. I said, you know, I'm a little tired. Let me just rest my eyes for a second. You know, 3 hours later, I woke up. So apparently I was snoring.
Right.
It knocked me out. Absolutely. I mean, but I'm just so thankful to have it done, and to have it in there. And obviously it's always I won't say it's a risk, but it's always an interesting choice to take these vaccines. But for me, this one was a no brainer. Got it done. Very thankful that they had it available here in Los Angeles. So a couple weeks from now, I can worry less about that.
Right, exactly. Now, do you have to have any boosters to follow up with that?
No. So it's kind of like when you get the smallpox vaccine when you're a child, where, you know, once you have it, you have it. And it should, in principle, be lifelong. And I keep adding all the caveats because there actually isn't any data in relation to how this particular vaccine will work against this variant of monkeypox. So in theory, yes, hopefully this is the one, I almost said a one-shot thing, but two-shot, really, a two-shot thing. and then you should be good for the rest of your life, but we'll see. So got it done. It's in there, and hopefully the cases will continue to go down where this won't be an issue. But if there's anything like COVID, I wanted to make sure to go ahead and get the vaccine as early as I possibly could.
So are you still buying, you know, the test for COVID? Are you still buying, are there any tests available for monkeypox that you can use, or is all under COVID?
So we're still buying the COVID, the rapid test at home. Joey, as you know, works in healthcare, so he has to use them at work all the time. He actually just took a rapid test today just to make sure that what he was feeling was, you know, the side effects of the vaccine and not COVID, which he doesn't have COVID, thank God. I think like most people were still using that because COVID's still a part of our everyday. But for monkeypox, very much like it was in the early phase of the pandemic, there just isn't enough testing. So there's no home test. Even most doctors don't have a test in office. They have to send out the samples to, I believe, Atlanta to have it tested there to confirm if you actually have it. So there isn't enough testing, and, you know, because of that, it's hard to know how many cases there actually are out there that are being reported in. So, you know, most people in my peer group said, oh, we've seen this before. Not enough testing, new thing, popping up. Let's just go ahead and get the shots because we know there's probably more cases than they're actually telling us.
Oh, it's so true. You know, I find myself every time I walk into Walgreens, I start looking to see if they have the test for COVID. And The tests are changing. Now they're in little boxes. And, you know, it used to be you could count on a specific one that you liked and you trusted. But now they're changing. It's so weird to me, and I don't know enough about each of them, but I buy them. You know, if I'm down, and I don't know what that means if you're getting down. I mean, when do you start buying again? You know, if you have 10 tests total, would you start buying them again? Because 10 is not enough.
No, I think once we're down to, you know, two boxes, which is four tests, we'll say, okay, let's get one more. Because, you know, with those rapid tests, sometimes you have to. But with the rapid test and with the new variants, I feel like you have to do a couple tests to confirm if you do or don't have it over a couple days, which has always been the instruction. You know, if you read the box, it always says that. But with these newer variants, I feel like the last time I had it, I tested negative on those tests for 3 days and then suddenly tested positive. So, and all the while, Joey was positive. But to me, I'm less shocked by, or rather, I'm less intrigued by the culture of when and how we buy tests and how we're so used to doing them. And I'm more intrigued how in the workplace, COVID has just become something that is so normalized, where you're in a meeting and people, you know, back in the day, a person would say, I have COVID, and we all gasped. Oh, my God, are you okay? Oh, no. And now we work through it where I'll be right in a meeting and it's like someone's like, oh, I'm sorry, I sound like this. I have COVID. And then like half the room goes, oh, yeah, I just had it. Okay, let's go ahead and start. First item, I mean, people are just kind of just power through it. And if they can't, you know, they'll take out for a day. But it just goes around so much that it's changed our culture. Now, a small piece to add in there, of course, that there's a blessing there in that we have the vaccines and we've had it enough times where thankfully our cases are mild enough where we can work through it. It's almost a luxury compared to people who maybe haven't had it or didn't get the vaccine where it's still a life-threatening disease.
Wow. I know we have to take a break, Jonathan. So we're going to take a break, come back with an update on the weather here. We've had some interesting, it's been an interesting night, and we'll see how it continues. Jonathan Lowe will give us an update in a moment. You know, I love this song, Jonathan. Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to the Mom and Michael Hour right here on WCCO as we wrap up this hour. And I tell you, my son, Michael Battle, always joins us whenever he can right here on WCCO. He lives in Los Angeles, and I'm thrilled that he's here tonight. Of course, Michael, I've been hearing, since I've been at work tonight, I've been hearing that consumers are not watching as much TV as they were. They were consuming a whole lot, but now they're not as interested anymore. Now, sports is just huge. People are really watching sports, but not necessarily just TV. What do you say?
Well, we have to, when we talk about TV, of course, we have to parse that out into broadcast television, as we heard, you know, quote, the old-fashioned way and the news break earlier. And then, of course, there's streaming television, which is equally, actually, bigger in most cases. So in totality, yes, absolutely, people are watching less TV now than they were during the lockdown because people watch more television then than we had seen in generations because there was nothing to do, nowhere to go. Everyone was just at home binging all that could be binged on all these streaming services were provided to us. And I worked in entertainment, so it was quite a boom for us, leading into that period of time and then even coming out of it, where there was just this enormous explosion of consumption of all things media and content online and on television. That said, obviously streaming shows are still hugely popular, even with the stock challenges and the cultural challenges that Netflix has had recently. They're still massive. I mean, these shows that come out on these streaming services have really, really, really big returns, enormous amounts of eyeballs on them. So when these big shows drop, it's not fair at all to say, oh, people are watching less TV. Sure, maybe they're watching less than the peak of TV watching, might I say, ever. But we're still seeing enormous numbers concentrated on streaming services compared to what we've seen more recently on broadcast television. And if you really were to compare the eyeballs that are pointing at a streaming service versus what we used to see for a big TV show like, I don't know, Friends back in the day when broadcast TV was still strong, it's comparable. The financials are completely different, but people are watching streaming services still. But those numbers are down in part because they're going out, going to restaurants, having experiences. So I think, if we're still at really healthy numbers in terms of who's watching streaming services, but those funds are now going back into small businesses and our neighborhoods, fantastic. I mean, that's the balance we need to keep this economy as strong as it is right now. And people are doing it. And weirdly, consumer confidence right now is still very strong. And even though some people have pulled back a little bit, they're still going out. They're going to movies. They're going to go eat. They're out with their families. And I am no economist. I'm not the person who could make those numbers make sense. But personally, I think it's because we did go through a pandemic. Obviously, we hear that, inflation is it's evened out. And now they're hoping that it will continue to tick downwards as we go forward. And that is that's happening because of increased interest rates, which is driving the inflation down. Great. That's what the Fed is trying to do. But we're sick of it. We've been in the house for a long time. And yes, that was 2020, but I think that lingering effect of, oh, there's something crazy happening. Okay, I'm going to go eat with my kids now. I think people are just in this pattern where we're not going to wait for tomorrow to go live our lives and have fun, because we have seen what can happen. And I think that shift may be in place for a long time, where our persistent consumer confidence will stay higher than it probably should, because we simply refuse to go back to a version of our lives where we don't live our best lives.
Wow, that's very interesting. Very interesting, Michael. Thank you for giving us that insight, because I watch all the old stuff, like Living Single and, every now and then the news, because I was just outdone with the news. I couldn't take it anymore. So, yeah, I'm sticking with the old school Perry Mason, HG, all things HGTV.
But wait. Is it original Perry Mason or new Perry Mason?
No, it's the original. Except for today, there was one. Yeah, but today it was one that it was more like the 1970s, so it was in color. I want to see him in black and white. That's all I'm saying. So,
But adding to that, you aren't the only one. There are millions of people who love those shows, and streaming services know that, which is why they're buying up old libraries and putting all of that content on their service to say, hey, you can watch as much of enter whatever show you want on our service. We can put the whole thing there to kind of retrain certain audiences to come to that center to watch their favorite content. So, and yeah, I do make it sound like, oh, no one's watching broadcast television. Comparatively, that's pretty much the narrative of truth. But there are still millions of people who are watching live TV. Of course, as mentioned in the news break, sports, live TV, as you said also, are still huge, big numbers there. Sports on streaming is big, too. That's a new thing now. But on your streaming service, you can watch live sports. So they're still there, but we knew this was coming. The death of broadcast television as we knew it has long been forecasted, and we are well on the way of that becoming a reality.
Oh, I don't know about that. We'll see. That's my statement. I'm signing my name to it right now. Geraldine Steele says, yes, right. I don't know about that. That's all I got to say. A lot of people thought it would be gone a long time ago, and it's not. So, just saying.
No, I feel like we're very much on track. I mean, the streaming marketplace will keep shifting. Some may not survive. Some may conflate together. That's all going to keep changing. But I don't see a version where, you know, large scale audiences shift back to having to be told when they can watch the content they want. That's just not a cultural shift that's going to happen. I think if it continues to laser in on key events, you know, sports, Oscars, or it could even be news programming where there's one particular show that people just want to tune in to watch because it's so topical and that it draws them in at a certain time. Maybe that could be in the future, but that model that you and I were raised with, where, oh, I love that show, let's make sure I'm at home on the couch with my food ready at 7 p.m. to watch it, that whole world has been aggressively being reduced in terms of viewers and in terms of the economies around that, in terms of how the people who make the shows make money and how the networks themselves make money off of that model.
Yeah, and I wish we could find a better way for musicians and artists that sing and dance to make more money. Because, you know, of course, television is really big right now, and the streaming services are big right now, but a lot of musicians and artists, painters, you know, not doing so well. So there you go. Hey, Michael, I do want to ask you, I know we're starting to wrap up here in a moment, but Labor Day, I don't consider Labor Day as like the beloved national holiday. Do you see it that way, or do you just see it as another day to have off where you can really spend it thinking about everything else?
Will Michael answer this question? How will he answer this question?
Right.
We'll find out after the break here on CCO, right?
Thank you, Jonathan. Oh, my gosh. It is now 10:53 here at WCCO. We are hearing thunder here in North Minneapolis, and it looks like the storms are quieting down in the Twin Cities area for sure. Thank goodness. As we wrap this up, I do want to ask my son, Michael Battle, who is joining us. This is the Mom and Michael Hour. And son, I'm just curious about Labor Day. And the reason I ask you about it is because it used to be a time, because it was all about the 19th century, when labor activists pushed for a federal holiday to recognize the many contributions workers have made to America's strength, prosperity, and well-being. I don't know about you, but when people talk about Labor Day on Labor Day, especially on the news, you know, whether it's radio or television or wherever you get it from, I don't hear them talking about America's strength at all, or prosperity. They just kind of talk about Labor Day as the day you have off, enjoy your holiday, that sort of thing. We don't hear as much about what Labor Day, how we got here, you know, how labor has been moving in a different direction for a long time. So what say you?
We don't. And actually, that's a challenge with many holidays in America, where it's become more about the economics of it. You know, oh, you have time off, there's a big sale, go shop, go buy a car, go buy this, go buy that. That tends to overpower the message of what the holiday actually is, whether it be Labor Day or Christmas, for that matter. But Labor Day, I think, has for a lot of people, it just means back to school shopping. It marks the time when your schedule, your life is about to shift in a dramatic way, because obviously, before the pandemic, that's when a lot of kids were going back to school. And a lot of parents either were really excited or dreading that whole shift happening in their household. So it doesn't feel like a time to go take a road trip or have a big vacation. It just kind of feels like, oh, let's get a nap in, because after that, it's going to be a road going straight through to Thanksgiving. So I think culturally, it just has less of that easy breezy fun time feeling than other holidays during the summer.
I agree. Now, Michael, we only have about a minute and a half. I want to talk about Disney and how you called your nieces and your nephew and your sister, and just talk about a little bit how important it was what you told them about Disney World and what it would look like, or Disneyland. And they were just in awe of all the video. They were live with you on FaceTime. It was beautiful. Yeah. Thank you for doing that. What did you hear about it? What did you feel? What we felt?
I hope so. I mean, I just obviously I go there a lot. I'm really looking forward to bringing them there to show them Disneyland, my happy place. So I thought, you know what? Hey, I'm walking in. It's not too loud. It's not too packed. Let me FaceTime them and just say, hey, here's a tour. Here's what it looks like to walk down Main Street into Disneyland, and here's the Disney Castle. And they seem to love it. So I couldn't hear all of the reactions, but I was happy to be able to share a little bit.
I wish you could have. Even Shagun just was blown away by what he was seeing. And I'm so grateful that you did that, Michael. I wish you could have been there to feel their emotions and how happy they were. The next question when you hung up was, when are we leaving? That's on you, dude. Make it happen, honey. Make it happen. So I love you so much. Thank you for joining us tonight, and so sorry about all of the challenges, but you stay safe there. Stay safe.
I will. I love you too.
Don't forget who you are and whose you are, okay?
All right.
All right. Tell Joy I said hi. All right, to everyone else that have been listening, we are so grateful that you join us here on WCCO every Sunday night between... You know I love this song, Jonathan. Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to the Mom and Michael Hour right here on WCCO as we wrap up this hour. And I tell you, my son, Michael Battle, always joins us whenever he can right here on WCCO. He lives in Los Angeles, and I'm thrilled that he's here tonight. Of course, Michael, I've been hearing, since I've been at work tonight, I've been hearing that consumers are not watching as much TV as they were. They were consuming a whole lot, but now they're not as interested anymore. Now, sports is just huge. People are really watching sports, but not necessarily just TV. What do you say?
Well, we have to, when we talk about TV, of course, we have to parse that out into broadcast television, as you heard, you know, quote, the old-fashioned way and the news break earlier. And then, of course, there's streaming television, which is equally, actually, bigger in most cases. So in totality, yes, absolutely, people are watching less TV now than they were during the lockdown because people watched more television then than we had seen in generations because there was nothing to do, nowhere to go. Everyone was just at home binging all that could be binged on all these streaming services were provided to us. I worked in entertainment, so it was quite a boom for us leading into that period of time and then even coming out of it where there was just this enormous explosion of consumption of all things media and content online and on television. That said, obviously streaming shows are still hugely popular, even with the stock challenges and the cultural challenges that Netflix has had recently, they're still massive. I mean, these shows that come out on these streaming services have really, really, really big returns, enormous amounts of eyeballs on them. So when these big shows drop, it's not fair at all to say, oh, people are watching less TV. Sure, maybe they're watching less than the peak of TV watching, might I say, ever, but we're still seeing enormous numbers concentrated on streaming services compared to what we've seen more recently on broadcast television. And if you really were to compare the eyeballs that are pointing at a streaming service versus what we used to see for a big TV show like, I don't know, Friends back in the day when broadcast TV was still strong, it's comparable. The financials are completely different, but people are watching streaming services still. But those numbers are down in part because they're going out, going to restaurants, having experiences. So I think, you know, if we're still at really healthy numbers in terms of who's watching streaming services, but those funds are now going back into small businesses and our neighborhoods, fantastic. I mean, that's the balance we need to keep this economy as strong as it is right now. And people are doing it. And weirdly, you know, consumer confidence right now is still very strong. And even though some people have pulled back a little bit, they're still going out. They're going to movies. They're going to go eat. They're out with their families. And I am no economist. I'm not the person who could make those numbers make sense. But personally, I think it's because we did go through a pandemic. Obviously, we hear that, you know, inflation it's evened out. And now they're hoping that it will continue to tick downwards as we go forward. And that is that's happening because of increased interest rates, which is driving the inflation down. Great. That's what the Fed is trying to do. But we're sick of it. We've been in the house for a long time. And yes, you know, that was 2020, but I think that lingering effect of, oh, there's something crazy happening. Okay. I'm going to go eat with my kids now. You know, I think people are just in this pattern where we're not going to wait for tomorrow to go live our lives and have fun, because we have seen what can happen. And I think that shift may be in place for a long time, where our persistent consumer confidence will stay higher than it probably should, because we simply refuse to go back to a version of our lives where we don't live our best lives.
Wow, that's very interesting. Very interesting, Michael. Thank you for giving us that insight, because I watch all the old stuff, like Living Single, and you know, every now and then the news, because I was just outdone with the news. I couldn't take it anymore. So yeah, you know, I'm sticking with the old school, Perry Mason. HG, all things HGTV.
But wait. Is it original Perry Mason or new Perry Mason?
No, it's the original. Except for today, today it was one that it was more like the 1970s, so it was in color. You know,
I want to see boy.
Him. I want to see him in black and white. That's all I'm saying. So,
but. But adding to that, you aren't the only one. There are millions of people who love those shows, and streaming services know that, which is why they're buying up old libraries and putting all of that content on their service to say, hey, you can watch as much of enter whatever show you want on our service. We can put the whole thing there to kind of retrain certain audiences to come to that center to watch their favorite content. So, and yeah, I do make it sound like, you know, oh, no one's watching broadcast television. Comparatively, that's pretty much the narrative of truth. But there are still millions of people who are watching live TV. Of course, as mentioned in the news break, sports, live TV, as you said also, are still huge, big numbers there. Sports on streaming is big, too. That's a new thing now. But on your streaming service, you can watch live sports. So they're still there, but we knew this was coming. The death of broadcast television as we knew it has long been forecasted, and we are well on the way of that becoming a reality.
Oh, I don't know about that. We'll see.
That's
my statement. I'm signing my name to it right now. Geraldine Steele says, yes, right. I don't know about that. That's all I got to say, right? A lot of people thought it would be gone a long time ago, and it's not. So, just saying.
No, I feel like we're very much on track. I mean, the streaming marketplace will keep shifting. Some may not survive. Some may conflate together. That's all going to keep changing. But I don't see a version where, you know, large-scale audiences shift back to having to be told when they can watch the content they want. That's just not a cultural shift that's going to happen. I think if it continues to laser in on key events, you know, sports, Oscars, or it could even be news programming where there's one particular show that people just want to tune in to watch because it's so topical and that it draws them in at a certain time. Maybe that could be in the future, but that model that you and I were raised with where, oh, I love that show, let's make sure I'm at home on the couch with my food ready at 7 p.m. to watch it, that whole world has been aggressively being reduced. In terms of viewers and in terms of the economies around that, in terms of how the people who make the shows make money and how the networks themselves make money off of that model.
Yeah, and I wish we could find a better way for musicians and artists that sing and dance to make more money. Because, you know, of course, television is really big right now, and the streaming services are big right now, but a lot of musicians and artists, painters, you know, not doing so well. So there you go. Hey, Michael, I do want to ask you, I know we're starting to wrap up here in a moment, but Labor Day, I don't consider Labor Day as like, of the beloved national holiday. Do you see it that way, or do you just see it as another day to have off where you can really spend it thinking about everything else?
Will Michael answer this question? How will he answer this question?
Right.
We'll find out after the break here on CCO, right?
Thank you, Jonathan. Oh, my gosh. It is now 10:53 here at WCCO. We are hearing thunder here in North Minneapolis, and it looks like the storms are quieting down in the Twin Cities area for sure. Thank goodness. As we wrap this up, I do want to ask my son, Michael Battle, who is joining us. This is the Mom and Michael Hour. And son, I'm just curious about Labor Day. And the reason I ask you about it is because it used to be a time, because it was all about the 19th century when labor activists pushed for a federal holiday to recognize the many contributions workers have made to America's strength, prosperity, and well-being. I don't know about you, but when people talk about Labor Day on Labor Day, especially on the news, you know, whether it's radio or television or wherever you get it from, I don't hear them talking about America's strength at all or prosperity. They just kind of talk about Labor Day as the day you have off, enjoy your holiday, that sort of thing. We don't hear as much about what Labor Day, how we got here, you know, how labor has been moving in a different direction for a long time. So what say you?
We don't. And actually, that's a challenge with many, many holidays in America, where it's become more about the economics of it. You know, oh, you have time off, there's a big sale, go shop, go buy a car, go buy this, go buy that. That tends to overpower the message of what the holiday actually is, whether it be Labor Day or Christmas, for that matter. But Labor Day, I think, has, for a lot of people, it just means back to school shopping. It marks the time when your schedule, your life is about to shift in a dramatic way, because obviously before the pandemic, that's when a lot of kids were going back to school. And a lot of parents either were really excited or dreading that whole shift happening in their household. So it doesn't feel like a time to go take a road trip or have a big vacation. It just kind of feels like, oh, let's get a nap in, because after that, it's going to be a road going straight through to Thanksgiving. So I think culturally it just has less of that easy breezy fun time feeling than other holidays during the summer.
I agree. Now, Michael, we only have about a minute and a half. I want to talk about Disney and how you called your nieces and your nephew and your sister, and just talk about a little bit how important it was what you told them about Disney World and what it would look like, or Disneyland. And they were just in awe of all the video. They were live with you on FaceTime. It was beautiful. Yeah. Thank you for doing that. What do you hear about it? What did you feel? What we felt?
I hope so. I mean, I just obviously I go there a lot. I'm really looking forward to bringing them there to show them Disneyland, my happy place. So I thought, you know what? Hey, I'm walking in. It's not too loud. It's not too packed. Let me FaceTime them and just say, hey, here's a tour. Here's what it looks like to walk down Main Street into Disneyland. And here's the Disney Castle, and they seem to love it. So I couldn't hear all of the reactions, but I was happy to be able to share just a little bit.
I wish you could have. Even Shay Goon just was blown away by what he was seeing. And I'm so grateful that you did that, Michael. I wish you could have been there to feel their emotions and how happy they were. The next question when you hung up was, when are we leaving? That's on you, dude. Make it happen, honey. Make it happen. So I love you so much. Thank you for joining us tonight, and so sorry about all of the challenges, but you stay safe there. Stay safe.
I will. I love you too.
Don't forget who you are and whose you are, okay?
All right.
All right. Tell Joy I said hi. All right, to everyone else that have been listening, we are so grateful that you join us here on WCCO every Sunday night between 7 and 11 p.m. It is my joy to be with you, so thank you for bringing that joy. And I must tell you, Jonathan, you are doing a great job. I really enjoy being with you on a Sunday night, and he is one of my producers, as well as Chris Tubbs. I want to say thank you to both of my producers and, of course, to all of my guests. Take care, you guys. I'll see you next week. It is now 10:53 here at WCCO. We are hearing thunder here in North Minneapolis, and it looks like the storms are quieting down in the Twin Cities area for sure. Thank goodness. As we wrap this up, I do want to ask my son, Michael Battle, who is joining us. This is the Mom and Michael Hour. And son, I'm just curious about Labor Day. And the reason I ask you about it is because it used to be a time, because it was all about the 19th century when labor activists pushed for a federal holiday to recognize the many contributions workers have made to America's strength, prosperity, and well-being. I don't know about you, but when people talk about Labor Day on Labor Day, especially on the news, you know, whether it's radio or television or wherever you get it from, I don't hear them talking about America's strength at all, or prosperity. They just kind of talk about Labor Day is the day you have off, enjoy your holiday, that sort of thing. We don't hear as much about what Labor Day, how we got here, you know, how labor has been moving in a different direction for a long time. So what say you?
We don't. And actually, that's a challenge with many, many holidays in America, where it's become more about the economics of it. You know, oh, you have time off, there's a big sale, go shop, go buy a car, go buy this, go buy that. That tends to overpower the message of what the holiday actually is, whether it be Labor Day or Christmas, for that matter. But Labor Day, I think, has, for a lot of people, it just means back to school shopping. It marks the time when your schedule, your life is about to shift in a dramatic way, because obviously, before the pandemic, that's when a lot of kids were going back to school. And a lot of parents either were really excited or dreading that whole shift happening in their household. So it doesn't feel like a time to go take a road trip or have a big vacation. It just kind of feels like, oh, let's get a nap in, because after that, it's going to be a road going straight through to Thanksgiving. So I think culturally, it just has less of that easy breezy fun time feeling than other holidays during the summer.
I agree. Now, Michael, we only have about a minute and a half. I want to talk about Disney and how you called your nieces and your nephew and your sister, and just talk about a little bit how important it was what you told them about Disney World and what it would look like, or Disneyland. And they were just in awe of all the video. They were live with you on FaceTime. It was beautiful. Yeah. Thank you for doing that. What do you do here about it? What did you feel? What we felt?
I hope so. I mean, I just obviously I go there a lot. I'm really looking forward to bringing them there to show them Disneyland, my happy place. So I thought, you know what? Hey, I'm walking in. It's not too loud. It's not too packed. Let me FaceTime them and just say, hey, here's a tour. Here's what it looks like to walk down Main Street into Disneyland, and here's the Disney Castle. And they seem to love it. So I couldn't hear all the reactions, but I was happy to be able to share just a little bit.
I wish you could have. Even Shagun just was blown away by what he was seeing. And I'm so grateful that you did that, Michael. I wish you could have been there to feel their emotions and how happy they were. The next question when you hung up was, when are we leaving? That's on you, dude. Make it happen, honey. Make it happen. So I love you so much. Thank you for joining us tonight, and so sorry about all of the challenges, but you stay safe there. Stay safe.
I will. I love you too.
Don't forget who you are and whose you are, okay?
All right.
Tell Joy I said hi. All right, to everyone else that have been listening, we are so grateful that you join us here on WCCO every Sunday night between 7 and 11 p.m. It is my joy to be with you, so thank you for bringing that joy. And I must tell you, Jonathan, you are doing a great job. I really enjoy being with you on a Sunday night, and he is one of my producers, as well as Chris Tubbs. I want to say thank you to both of my producers and, of course, to all of my guests. Take care, you guys. I'll see you next week.